Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spotlight Honors, a production of Rave Waves Book Club and Rave Waves Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ron Yates, broadcasting live from Murrieta, California, in the heart of Southern California's wine country. Well, today, Spotlight Honors is sponsored by and the music played by Nonnie Jules. We'll learn more about this short story a little bit later on in the show. But if you'd like to learn how you can sponsor an episode of Spotlight Honors, just visit the Rave Waves Blog Talk Radio main page on the RRBC site for details. Now, before I get started, I want to remind our listeners that you can participate in the show with comments or questions on Twitter by typing the hashtag RRBC Spotlight Honors into Twitter's search box in the top right-hand corner of your Twitter page, and then clicking on the latest tab. Once again, that's hashtag RRBC Spotlight Honors, all one word. And don't forget, those who have registered with Rave Waves Radio can call into the show and ask your questions live on air. Now, if you've not registered as a call-in participant, you can go to the RRBC site and click on the Rave Waves Blog Talk Radio button, and then you scroll down to a tab that says RRBC Rave Waves Call-In Listener Registration, and just fill out that form. As easy as that. Well, today our Spotlight Honors guest is author John Podlaski, who is talking to us from Sterling Heights, Michigan. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, Ryan. Glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you. And before we get deeper into our conversation, tell us a little bit about yourself, John. I know you served in the U.S. Army Infantry in Vietnam in 1970 and 71, where you were awarded a Bronze Star and two Air Medals, the Combat Infantry Badge, and a Vietnamese Cross of Gallantry. Clearly, that background provided you with a lot of material for your books. So tell us what you've been doing since your service in the Army, John. And by the way, thank you for your service.
Well, thank you. Since I ended up in a leadership position in the military, when I went back to my employer after the service, I was immediately promoted to a supervisor and kept that position for the next 18 years. When they closed and relocated to a different state, I was unemployed and started searching for work and ended up spending the next 30 years in management positions, the last 20 being plant manager positions, where my specialty was opening new facilities, closing facilities, and then turning them around. I've been a member of charter member of VVA Chapter 154 in Mount Clements, Michigan, all these years. I'm a life member now, and own a 97 Harley Heritage. My wife and I both retired in 2013, and we have a little 22-month-old grandchild, our first grandchild, and sort of makes retirement a little bit more difficult, but a lot more fun.
Well, I know what that's about. We've got here I have two grandkids right down the road from us, and I've got two others up in Portland, Oregon. So what it does is it either two things. It keeps you young, or it reminds you how difficult it is to bring children up into the world, because it's not something that when I was younger and we had our own kids, it seemed like it was a lot easier. But when you got grandkids, wow, it's different, because first of all, you're pretty tolerant. you let them do what they want to do, pretty much.
That's true. But being on the floor with them and they take off on you, they're in the next room and mischief before you can get up off the floor.
That's right. I try to avoid getting on the floor, you know. Oh, brother. Man, I'll tell you. Well, let's talk a little about your book, Cherries, a Vietnam War Novel. And that was published back in 2010. But let me share just a little blurb about the book with our listeners and for those who aren't familiar with it. And here's a blurb that comes I took off of Amazon. In 1970, John Kowalski is one of many young, naive teenage soldiers sent to Vietnam to fight in an unpopular war. Dubbed cherries by their more seasoned peers, these newbies suddenly found themselves thrust into the middle of a terrible nightmare. On-the-job training is intense, however, and most of these teenagers were hardly ready to absorb the harsh mental, emotional, and physical stress of war. When coming under enemy fire and witnessing death firsthand, a life-changing transition begins, one that cannot be reversed. So, John, I mean, in addition to Cherries, a Vietnam War novel, you've written another novel about American soldiers in Vietnam, published in 2018, entitled When Can I Stop Running? Now, I'm assuming the stories these two books tell are based on your own experiences serving in Vietnam. Did you have to do any further research for the books beyond your own experiences?
No, not at all. I carried a diary with me when I was in Vietnam. Not so much something that held personal thoughts or whatever. It was pretty much just a ledger of what happened during the day. And after I was married in 73, a couple years later, when visiting my mother, she had brought me out a shoebox full of all the letters I had written home. She had saved each and every one of them, and using the letters, using the diary, that pretty much helped me develop an outline for the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's sort of what I do. I used to keep, in addition to everything else I was doing, I spent most of my career as a foreign correspondent, and a lot of that in Vietnam toward the end of the war, when I covered the fall of Saigon, the end of the wars in Cambodia and Vietnam. And I kept a journal. And it wasn't exactly a diary. I just kept a journal of people that I had talked to, places I was, and, you know, descriptions of things that went on around me. And when it comes time to write about that time, it really helps to have that stuff in front of you, because these are things, little details that I know I would have forgotten otherwise. And I'm sure that's what happened with you. Though I think after you've been in combat, for any time at all, stuff that happens to you remains there, very vivid, and I don't think it goes away. I think there are things you'll always remember, and no matter how many years pass, you'll never forget certain things about being in combat, that's for sure.
Oh, that's for sure. There's a saying on the internet, at the social circles, that I left Vietnam, but I can't remember how that goes now. But it stays with you forever. You're absolutely true. And out of the clear blue sky, there might be a trigger, a smell or a sight or a sound or something that all of a sudden will bring that memory up on top of your mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think what you're saying is I left Vietnam, but Vietnam didn't leave me.
Thank you.
Something like that. Right. Yeah, that's and that's true. You know, these things you just don't forget. And, you know, here's something else. A lot of people don't realize this. You know, when you look back at the wars that we've been involved in, you look back at World War II, the average American soldier during World War II spent the equivalent of about 30 to 35 days in combat. The guys that served, the people who served in Vietnam, if they were in country for a year, they spent almost 280 days in combat. And that's an incredible amount of time to be faced with that kind of stress and being involved in a war, being constantly under fire and whatever, you know, it's incredible. People don't really understand that. And the people that served in Vietnam, that's why you come back out of that war with a lot of baggage, a lot of scars, things that that you'll never forget. And the sad thing about it is the way the people who served in Vietnam, the soldiers who came back, were the way they were treated. And I think that was just awful. And thank God that that's all changed now. At least with the guys who are serving and who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, Syria, and places like that. But go ahead.
One thing that when I used to speak to students and that about the war, one of the things I would bring up to make them relate would be in a spook house, you know, in a carnival or circus somewhere, and you can't see, you're feeling your way through, you know something's going to jump out at you, you know, and scare the dickens mm-hmm. out of you. But mm-hmm. in the case of Vietnam, somebody jumps out at you, you could lose your life. So,
exactly.
you know, every time you're on patrol, that's the type of feeling you have. You know, there's an enemy out there. That enemy's going to jump out at you at any minute. Whether he does or does not, you still are set with that stress, and there's no way to relieve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just also the environment. I mean, you're in many cases in Vietnam, you're in a jungle environment or a forest environment or whatever, and you really can't see what more than 10 or 15 feet in front of you on either side or behind or wherever, you know. And then plus you have all the other accoutrements that the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese were using, all the
booby
traps. Yeah, they were all over the place. Punji sticks, God knows everything, things, holes you would step into, and you know, you'd get a spike with up your foot through your foot or whatever. It was pretty awful, and these are all things that could weigh on your mind. You know, I see you also write a blog entitled Cherry's Writer, Vietnam War Website. Tell us a little bit about that. There are a lot of, you know, misconceptions about the war in Vietnam, and I suspect your blog might deal with some of those. Are there any egregious inaccuracies about Vietnam and America's involvement there that you would like to clear up and that you might have tried to clear up in your books?
No, I'd rather not get into that on this show. But the blog that I have is kind of to keep the image and the spirit of the Vietnam vet, our legacy going,
mm-hmm.
Because we are dying at a fast rate, Agent Orange and some of the other things that the government told us would not hurt us are killing us here. So I have personal articles that I write relating to my time in Vietnam, maybe some snippets from the book,
mm-hmm.
actual pictures, music, videos, just a ton of stuff on there. And I have a lot of guest writers that are Vietnam vets. I was in the infantry, and I'll have
mm-hmm.
POWs. I've had pilots. I've had Navy people. They all tell their stories so that there's an entire picture that is out there, and not just from the infantry point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Cherries was written in a case where, in most instances, you have the 18-year-old that goes overseas to war. First off, he's really amazed that he's landing in that country in a Pan-American jet, and people are not shooting and bombing him on the airport.
Mm-hmm.
The culture, the smells, the heat, these are things that these young American kids never had. And they were just scared to death,
mm-hmm.
not knowing what was going to happen. And the guys that have been there for a while really don't want to take Cherries under their wing because they're considered a liability.
Right.
And they don't want to get killed trying to take care of a Cherry. So you're pretty much on your own learning the ropes and moving on. The book turned out to be more of a memoir, I guess, than a novel. But it depicts what this 18-year-old naive kid experiences, the fear, the stress, the physical abuse, everything that takes place during his year there, to where at the end of the year, you see a young man that has turned into a skilled soldier with
mm-hmm.
Leadership abilities, and how that young person has changed in a year. But the baggage that you don't see is what he holds inside of him mentally. And
right.
That might be a topic for another book, but I've written it in such a way to where the layperson could understand it, and some of the feedback I've received was from wives or kids of Vietnam vets who had clammed up after they returned home and didn't want to share their experiences because they say you're not going to understand anyway.
Right.
What Sherry's has allowed is for those lay people to actually get a feel of what their husband or father did. And I've received praise and thanks from these people, personal emails telling me how it's helped and how opened up communications between them and their spouses to the point where they started revealing some of this stuff 50 years after the fact. Cherry's was a big undertaking. It took over 30 years to put it together. And I don't know how many people in the club actually started their first book or what with an electric typewriter and carbon paper, but computers and word processors weren't around. So once you got done with a chapter and you got into editing, if you had to add a sentence, you had to retype the entire chapter all over again.
Right.
Because of the spacing and so on. So it wasn't uncommon to see a window-high pile of paper sitting in the corner of my office while I was going through this. So it took a while, but lo and behold, here it is.
No, that's well. I know what you're saying. When I was there as a journalist, at least when I was there covering the war, I used the Olivetti typewriter, and that's how I file my stories. I took them when I was in Saigon, and I took them down to the PTT office, and then they gave them to the lady, and she had to punch them into a telex machine, and they spit out a little long, thin ribbon of paper with holes in it, and she would feed that into the telex machine, and off it would go to Chicago, and that's how the story came out in the Tribune, the Chicago Tribune. No, it says I remember typing a lot of stories on the typewriter, and when you had to make adjustments or corrections, you had to do it. It wasn't easy, not like with the computer. You know, before we go any further, I want to jump over to Twitter. We've got a lot of activity over there, and people are chiming in here, so I want to jump in and kind of get some of the comments that we're hearing today. We've got Fiza Pathan, who's talking to us from chiming in from Mumbai, India. Says Pulaski, sir, is such a wonderful and supportive RRBC member. It's wonderful to hear him talk about his book Cherries. Natalie Ducey says you're here with me on the show, and she's glad that you're there. Nami Jewel says, a little less tolerant. Wow, I thought I'd love my grandkids more than I love my kids, and I really love my kids. I need to call a family meeting. We might need to rethink what this grandparent business. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm much more tolerant than I was with my own kids. I can tell you that because, it's very difficult for me to even think about disciplining them, and they really don't need it that much. I think probably when I was younger, I thought they might have, but my kids needed it. But my grandkids, they never need disciplining. Gracie Bradford says, John, thank you for your service and for sharing your experiences. Nani Jules says, that's what moms do. We save everything. Fiza Pathan says, I left Vietnam, but Vietnam never left me. I love reading and studying about it, but I can't ever imagine how it must have been in combat. Thank you, Ron, sir, and John, sir, for your service. Well, you're very welcome, Fiza, and I'm sure John feels the same way. Ronnie Deshay says, with that much time in combat, I'm amazed any of the soldiers came home sane. That's a good point, Ronnie. A lot of them didn't. A lot of them took many, many years to expunge the ghosts and the scars of that experience. And some people had worse experiences than others, of course, and some people had these things that had experiences which stuck with them much, much longer. I'm sure you're finding that too, right, John?
Yeah, plus a lot of them have come home to successful careers and lives.
Exactly, exactly. I think a lot of kids went over there and came back men, and they had grown up in a way that a lot of us will never fully appreciate or understand. What I learned from being my time in the Army was I learned a lot about not only about leadership, but I learned about responsibility and how others depend upon what you're doing. And if you're part of a team, whether it's a squad or you're a platoon or a squad, a rifle squad or whatever, you are part of that team and people depend upon you and you depend upon them. And that's what makes a very cohesive unit. It makes it a combat-worthy unit. Gracie Bradford says, I left Vietnam, but the war didn't leave me. The statement is so true, and so many veterans are still experiencing the wounds, physical and mental, of Vietnam. You are all unsung heroes. yeah, it's difficult. Like John said, it's difficult to explain. And a lot of the kids that came back, they just didn't want to talk about it because they knew nobody would really understand it. You know, I love the Vietnam era military slang glossary that you have on your website. I haven't heard some of those terms since I was in the Army. Do you get a lot of response from that glossary and from these slang terms that
well,
you have posted?
That happens to be the greatest tab or location on a website that gets the most hits.
Mm-hmm.
It averages, I'm going on 3 million visits, and
wow.
Probably half of those have stopped and gone through that glossary.
I did. I went through it, and I remember all those terms.
It expands the entire military service, not just Army. Marines had
right.
their own stuff. Navy had their own. And in the comment section, there's hundreds of comments. Well, you forgot this or you forgot that. Then, because there's so many terms in that glossary that it was overlooked to begin with. So, a lot of hey, you took me back 50 years ago. Thank you.
What is the the URL for your website.
It's just Cherry's Writer, WRITER,
mm-hmm.
.com.
Okay. Cherry's Writer, .com. That's good. Okay. That's good. That's good to know. Anybody who wants to, I urge you to go check out John's website. It's really fascinating and it's just loaded with great information. And if you go to that website and spend some time on it, you're going to learn a lot about what happened in Vietnam, a lot of stuff. They're just loaded with information. Before we go any further, pardon me?
I said you learn a lot if you read the book.
That's true. Either both the books, actually, because your other book is loaded with information too. Though it takes place over one evening and one night with two guys out in the sitting out in a listening post, and what goes through their minds and the things that their conversation and what they're. Their past, they bring it up to they talk about their past, they talk about what's happening now, and it's very just a very, very intense kind of a story. But before we go any further, I wonder if you could share with our listeners your experiences as a member of the Rave Waves Book Club. How has RRBC benefited you as a writer?
As a writer,
mm-hmm.
I have not been writing too much lately except for the blog articles, but I keep drumming Nani's comment in through my head that it's got to be perfect. You can't just finish something and put it out there for others to read. You got to take the time to go over it again and again and make sure it's perfect before you do go. I'm generally a mystery reader. Action, adventure type things, and coming through the book club sort of opened my eyes to other genres. So I'm reading different things, and Actually, we're talking about grandparents. I know that one of the members in India wrote a book about grandparents or being a grandparent and growing up. So that's on my to-read list. But it sort of opened up my eyes to other genres and got to meet other readers. And then by, not readers, but book members, going on Twitter and Facebook, I promote whatever I see and retweet whatever I see with the RBC hashtag. And there's a lot of support. It's what you give is what you get back. And
right.
There's a lot of names that I see on there that are new and old and consistent, but everybody's there to support everybody else. It's a great, great feeling.
Well, I think, yeah, you're exactly right. And it is a community of like-minded folks, and we all have the same issues that we deal with all the time when it comes to writing. And this is a great way to get feedback and to share our experiences and to support one another. And I think the person you're talking about writing about grandparents, you've mentioned grandparents, is Harriet Hodgins. I think she has written a book about grandparenting and the way a lot of grandparents now are bringing up their kids because their adult children are unable to do so or don't want to do it or whatever. So it's a much different world now for grandparents than it used to be. They were not only there to support their kids, they're actually raising their children or rearing their children today, the grandkids today. So that she's written about that. And I think that's the book that you might want to check her out, Harriet Hodgson. Well, I one thing I was going to ask you is in your journey as an author, when did you know that you wanted to write this book about Vietnam? Was it immediately after you came back, or did it take time to kind of well up inside of you? Or did you, because you said you started working on your first book, you've been working on it almost 30 years. So obviously you must have started pretty early on in the process when you were just back from Vietnam.
Actually, it happened the afternoon that my mother gave us the book of letters. My wife and I spent the afternoon looking through them, and she asked for clarification or what exactly did you want to say here or did you mean here or read between the lines? And it was, can you sort of write a couple papers or a couple pages and expound on this a little bit? So a couple pages led to 10, led to a chapter, and continued on and on to where she became my, not editor, but story reader, and I'd pass everything through her, and, well, this isn't clear, you know, could you strengthen that out? And that first book was called The Ingenuous Soldier, and was written in the first person, and I went out to, I forget, almost 100 different publishers trying to get it published, but back then Vietnam wasn't a good topic and nobody wanted anything to do with it, stories about it. So there was a publisher down in Atlanta, Georgia, that agreed to take it on if I was to rewrite it in the third person. And again, the first person was all typewritten, but when it came to the point of reworking it, Atari had just come out with a computer and a word processor program and the 5 1/4 floppy disk that if you used a hole puncher, you could also use the back side of them. And that, but the memory was limited. You could only put maybe a couple pages on an entire disk, and then you had to link it to the next disk. So that's how the rewrite took place. Over that, I got halfway through. My daughter was born at that time and family time, and I was working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and I just had to put it to a side, and next thing you know, it gathered dust for the next 7 or 8 years before I pulled it out again, and lo and behold, I had an IBM at that time. So my daughter was a pretty good typist, so we printed everything out with the Atari computer with red ink, blue ink, green ink, yellow ink, whatever ink I had available because nothing was available at the time. And she retyped everything, gave it to me on a stick, and it took about a year and a half to finish after that.
Wow. Well, it's a process, you know, and it's a great thing that you had those letters because that really provided the impetus and perhaps some of the background that you needed to get into the book. I'm going to jump back over to Twitter real fast. Fisa Pathan says there are a lot of discrepancies about Vietnam. There certainly are, especially out here in Asia. We here in India do not look at Vietnam from the American soldier's point of view at all. And that's definitely the case. And the way that people look at Vietnam in Asia is quite a bit different from the way we look at it, of course. Ronnie Deshay says, John, I'm so appreciative of what you and your fellow soldiers did. Thank you for your service. Nani Jewel says, my first writing experience was on an electric typewriter that my godmother purchased for me from Finger Furniture Store. Not sure why they were selling typewriters, but they did. Then she says, my grandfather passed and left me an old electric typewriter that doesn't work, but it's an antique, so I've stored it in my attic. I definitely understand the old typewriter. I do too. I've got my old, it's not electric, Nani, it's an old Underwood sitting in my garage. It still works. I can always go to it if my computer fails me. Bean Week says it's a fascinating discussion between author and John Podlaski and host Ron Yates. Nani Jewel says, please check out the author page to learn so much more about John. She's talking about John Podlaski here. When can I stop running? And she posts the cover of the book. Beam Week says, here's a link to author John Podlaski's website. Good. He posted the link right on on Twitter. So people just go click on it and you'll go right to John's website. And let's see. Oh, here we are. Beam Week. So speaking of grandparents writing books, check out Harriet Hodgson's book. There it is. The Grandma Force, How Grandmothers Are Changing Grandchildren. And that's the book you want to pick up, John.
Yep.
Anyway, I'll jump back over here real quick. Nani says, well, thank you. It's nice to know that somebody's listening to me. We should all value our writing reputation just as much as well as our reputation and guard them both just as fiercely. Absolutely true. Fisa says, what you give is what you get back. Yes, RRBC is a wonderful community of supporting members. I'm glad I'm here. We're coming toward the end of the show here a little bit. Before we do, I'm going to jump over and got to pay some bills. So I want to jump over and as promised, I want to give you some information about our sponsor today and the music played by Nani Jewels. So hang on one second and we will listen to this commercial and I'll be right back. Hang on 1 minute.
And the Music Played is the sequel and final chapter in the love story between Gianni and Christine. The first book, If Only There Was Music, The Poetry of Forbidden Love, was a love story told through the eyes of two lovers, but written for the hearts of many. Across oceans and through many barriers, two hearts try to connect. But with the distance between them, will their love survive? And with the forces that be against them, charging full force in the form of murder plots and domestic abuse, the bigger question is, will they? Gianni and Christine wrap up their love story with an explosive ending disguised by the subtleties of justice. And the Music Played, by author Nani Jewels, is a must-read for short story and other book lovers. Pick up your copy today on Amazon or wherever online books are sold legally.
Yes, that's do pick that up. It's a very interesting sequel to the earlier story that Nani wrote, and it's very well done, very, very well done. John, I'm just wondering before we close out the show here. I'm just wondering, are there any books or authors who have most influenced your life? I mean, for example, are there any books about the military or war that you've read that you felt were very helpful to you in your own writing experience?
only that they've confirmed what I written or what I wrote.
And
I wouldn't say there was one in particular. There's many. I've written or read hundreds of different Vietnam veteran memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned something new in each one. So to say somebody influenced me in my writing, no, I can't say that.
One of my best friends, a colleague, when I was at the Chicago Tribune, we were both in Vietnam covering the end of the war. He came a little bit later. I'd been there for many months, and he came toward the very end. It was Phil Caputo. He wrote a book called A Rumor of War, and it was about his experiences.
That.
Have you read it? When he was a Marine and the things that went on in Vietnam. And that was one of the very first books that I read about Vietnam written by somebody in my own age. And then I've also read other books, you know, I think Michael Hare's Dispatches. And then there are some more recent books that have been written that are eye-opening. And I think, you know, like a lot of folks, like you, John, people took a lot of time to digest everything that went on there. And it took them a while to process it all and to put it down into a computer or on paper. And so many of these things are clearly autobiographical, even though they might be written as novels like yours were. And I'm sure what you've got in both of your books, these are based on your own experiences there, and they're very vivid to you. And of course, in your books, they're very vivid too. Anything you'd like to
readers,
add about the, go ahead.
I was going to say a lot of readers have commented about my style of writing that, it puts them right in the scene. It's like they're right next to the person speaking. Cherries is a very dialogue heavy, book. And, a lot of the scenes change strictly through dialogue of the characters. And, people are just amazed by what goes on. If there's fear in the scene, they feel the fear. If they're climbing up a 30-degree grade of a mountain and they have to tie themselves to a tree to sleep at night, well, they feel that uncomfortableness and the physical exertion to get up there. So those are all good things. If I can get those comments from readers, then I did a pretty good job.
That's true. Well, there's no. I think for writers, there's nothing more gratifying than to hear from your readers that your story came alive for them, and they could see, in quotes, they could see what you were seeing, what you were writing, and they can see what your characters were seeing, and that is there's nothing better than that for an author to have. Readers say that it was real to them, and that's fantastic. Well, listen, I can see by the old cuckoo clock on the wall here that we're almost out of time, so I want to take a moment to thank you to our guest, author John Podlaski, for joining us today from Michigan. And so thank you, John. It was a great discussion. I could have gone on for another 30 or 40 minutes, I think, because this is a topic that you know, I can talk about forever, and you can too, I'm sure. And it's one that I think a lot of people are interested in, because a lot of people today don't really fully understand what went on in Vietnam. Also, I want to thank those who tuned in and who participated with us on Twitter with your comments and your thought-provoking questions. John, you might want to check out that Twitter feed, because I may have missed some comments, so I'm sure I did. We had quite a bit of activity, and I didn't get to everything on Twitter. And I also encourage our listeners to check out John's books in the RRBC catalog and on Amazon. So, John, once again, thank you for being with us, and hope to have you back again. And let me ask you, are you working on a new book now, or a sequel to the second book in your that you've written, the When Can I Stop Running which is the title of your second.
I'm playing around with an outline that, mm-hmm. yes, indeed, it's a sequel to the second one where the team goes out in the morning now and mm-hmm. To investigate what happened that night
mm-hmm.
and what they find.
Okay, good. Well, that's great. We'll look forward to that. And so in the meantime, once again, thank you, John, and thanks again for joining us on Spotlight Honors. And please join us again for the next edition of Ray Waves Blog Talk Radio, where all things literary are our passion. This is your host, Ron Yates, signing off and wishing all of you great reading and inspired writing. Goodbye.